Hey everyone, welcome back to Reason and Theology 2026. We made it. So I want to talk about a number of topics that have just recently come up. First of all, as you can see there in the title, I want to address something said by the newly created Cardinal Timothy Radcliffe and some things that he's saying about women's ordination to the priesthood, as well as the question of homosexuality. There are some very problematic statements that he's making here that do not at all align with what the church teaches. And I think that we need to take a look at it because it's something that really needs to be addressed. And that is the tension that we often see from what is being taught and said by very, very high-ranking prelates in the church versus what the church actually teaches. And we need to ask the question, why is there such tension and why does that continue to be tolerated? So we're going to take a look at something that he just told a very large publication, The Telegraph. And after that, I want to look at the situation where 30 priests have written to the Vatican asking them about some questions related to their bishop and whether or not he can restrict communicants whenever it comes to kneeling and the use of altar rails and questions along those lines. It's making the news, and so we need to talk about it, as well as the question of the Latin Mass, which is also coming up at the same time, because if y'all recall, I told y'all there is going to be a meeting between the Pope and all of the cardinals, an extraordinary consistory tomorrow. So they haven't told us the agenda, although I have some suspicions as to what they're going to talk about. However, what has happened is a few people have written to just the, you know, open letter, so to the world at large, and have submitted a proposal on the question of the Latin Mass and maybe a potential solution for people who are wanting to celebrate the Latin Mass and have access to the Latin Mass and greater access to it post Traditionis Custodis, where there's been a lot of restrictions there. I want to talk about it because I want to not only weigh in on that particular question, but I want to point out maybe how we might be missing the forest for the trees. So those are all the things that I want to cover today. So by the way, I want to remind y'all, hit the subscribe button and hit the like button if you haven't already. If you appreciate the content of this channel and you want to see this channel reach more people, please do your part by hitting the like button, hit the subscribe button, hit the bell for notification, by the way, so you know whenever I go live or post a new video. Okay, let's go over Cardinal Timothy Radcliffe. And let's first take a look very briefly at some things that he has said previously on the question of homosexuality that don't necessarily align with what the church teaches. And then we're going to take a look at some highlights from his interview with The Telegraph. Okay, so Cardinal Radcliffe was just created a cardinal. He was very, very popular priest and preacher, Dominican, so order of preachers, made a cardinal by Pope Francis right before he passed away. So newly created cardinal, and he hasn't been in the position very long, but he has already made a number of waves. Not only was it very controversial in making him a cardinal in light of some of the things that he said, but even since then, he's said some concerning things. So, giving you a quick overview of some of the things he has said here, let me read to you a source that's kind of compiled some of the quotes and positions of his on the question of homosexuality. So it notes, Radcliffe has not been without controversy when it comes to some of his comments on the church's moral teachings and particularly related to homosexuality. In 2005, as the Vatican debated whether men with same-sex attraction should be admitted to seminary, something that's still being debated, unto the present, as I've documented for some time now. Following the clerical sex abuse scandals, Father Radcliffe said the inclination should not bar men from the priesthood, but that those who oppose their candidacy should. So if you're opposed to somebody being ordained, if they have this inclination, you're the one who shouldn't be in seminary. Okay, so that kind of gives you a feel for where he's coming from. In a talk in Los Angeles in 2006, Father Radcliffe called on Catholics to accompany homosexuals as they discern what this means, letting our images be stretched open. He said this would mean watching Brokeback Mountain, the first major Hollywood movie to feature a love story between two leading homosexual roles, reading gay novels, living with our gay friends, and listening with them as they listen to the Lord. Now, look, listening, talking to people, that's there's nothing wrong with that, right? I mean, we should all listen to people, talk to them, accompany them. There's no issue there. But what this often functions as is a facade for more than that, more than just listening and accompanying people, but rather embracing to one degree or another their perspective and their position, and not actually challenging them to follow God's commandments. So often that is kind of a smoke screen for a deeper agenda. In a talk in Los Angeles in 2006, Father Radcliffe called on Catholics to accompany homosexuals as they discern what this means. In 2012, in support of same-sex civil unions, which the Vatican had always opposed, he wrote in the tablet that homosexual relationships should be cherished and supported. Now, all persons should be cherished and supported. Persons, right? Whether they struggle with same-sex attraction, whether they're in a same-sex relationship, all persons should be loved, supported, cherished. But the relationship is something different. Relationship, you know, from what I recall, having read the Bible at least over 10 times cover to cover, the Bible condemns homosexual relationships. It doesn't cherish them. God sees this as something that is wrong. He loves the sinner, but he hates the sin. And so the relationship shouldn't be loved and cherished and supported. Rather, it should be challenged and condemned. So again, that kind of tells you where he's coming from. And he also says that God, the God of love, can be present in every true love. So this is kind of a theme that we see with him frequently, where he's categorizing homosexual acts as love, as loving. And what you'll tend to see among a lot of the prelates in the church is they'll say, okay, it's not the fullest expression of love, as you might find with a heterosexual marriage. It's not the ideal, they'll say, but it is some form of love that should still be supported and cherished and is still somehow honored by God. I think this is kind of their way of weaseling through their heterodoxy into the church with language that you wouldn't necessarily want to challenge. I mean, who wants to be anti-love, right? Who wants to say, I'm against love? Well, nobody. So they put it in those terms that homosexual love is love that's recognized by God. And rather, it's not love. It's actually an unloving thing to do, to not will the good of the other. Willing the good of the other is what is love. But in this particular case, in these kinds of relationships, one is not willing the good of the other. So there's a bit of sleight of hand taking place here. Radcliffe has often celebrated masses for homosexual Catholics, the so-called Soho masses in London. Now, let me ask a question. Isn't the mass for everybody? Well, yeah. Yeah, it's supposed to be for everyone, right? It's not like this mass is just for white people. This mass is just for black people, even though, unfortunately, there are segregated parishes to this day, sadly. Be that as it may, the mass in and of itself isn't for a particular person. It's for everyone. So you don't have heterosexual masses and then homosexual masses. So when we speak of a mass for homosexual Catholics, first of all, why are you identifying by your sin? I don't understand that. We wouldn't say dishonest Catholics, gossiping Catholics, We wouldn't say adulterous Catholics, but here we say homosexual Catholics. Why? Well, I submit to you the reason why is they don't believe it's a sin. They're trying to normalize the concept to suggest it's not actually a sin. But masses for homosexual Catholics, excuse me, all Catholics who have struggled with the sin of same-sex attraction have been able to access the mass prior to these LGBTQ masses. So what's really going on here? Again, I believe what's going on is they're trying to normalize the activity. Writing in an Anglican journal in 2013, he said same-sex relationships can be expressive of Christ's self-gift. This is such a demonic suggestion to say that a sinful relationship is an expression of Jesus. Jesus was opposed to sin. And to identify him with sin is blasphemous. It's truly alarming to see this kind of stuff, but continuing here. He opposes gay marriage, saying it's not equivalent to marriage, as it is not inherently unitive. What often happens is you will see people who will affirm same-sex unions to one degree or another, but they'll say it's not the ideal. They'll say it's not the same thing as marriage. It's not the same thing as heterosexual relationships. And so what they'll do is they'll categorize heterosexual marriages at like a top tier, and then they'll put these other relationships in lower tiers, but they won't categorize them as sinful and wrong. They'll just put them in kind of a lesser degree of love, lesser degree of unitive expressions and loving expressions. So they'll kind of make it the difference between ideal and good versus good and evil. Those are the categories with which they operate in. Okay, so having given you that quick primer there on his background, let's now take a look briefly at some highlights from his article that just came out today with the Telegraph. They say this, and by the way, the article from the Telegraph is called Cardinal Timothy Radcliffe, No One Can Simply Say I'm a Woman, Our Biology is Fundamental. Okay, here's something really weird in the article. It says, soon after he was ordained in 1971, he fell in love with a woman. It was a difficult moment, he says. I suddenly thought, here is somebody that I love from the bottom of my heart. What was I to do? He invited her to stay at Blackfriars, thinking, the brethren have to know who I am. I love her. And she has to know who I am, one of the brethren. I became convinced that my vocation was to remain rooted in the order. They remain good friends. All right. Red flag there, okay? Let's start with the first part there. He falls in love after his ordination? Look, I get falling in love before, but to be ordained, you have to go through like six, maybe even more, years of seminary. How do you fall in love after? Unless you're maybe doing some things that you shouldn't be doing. That right there is a massive red flag. But it's said flippantly, as if this is ho-hum. It's just said in passing, as if this is no big deal. Something's off there, but it gets worse. Not only does he fall in love with somebody after ordination, but he invites her to stay with the Dominican community. Or the Black Friars? I mean, I don't understand. You're a priest, you're a Dominican, you fall in love, and you invite that person to come stay with you and the rest of your community. And nobody was like, this is odd, this is weird, this maybe shouldn't be happening. The brethren have to know who I am. I love her. She has to know who I am, one of the brethren. Okay. I just submit to you, a person who is doing this is probably not in a position to speak about the question of morality or sexual relationships. That right there is a massive red flag. Okay. On the question of gay masses and homosexual relationships, it says this led to the controversial Soho masses, fortnightly services in central London for the gay community, which is what we just talked about, these gay masses. And this is not a, you know, unique thing. We have been seeing a lot of pride masses, unfortunately, in the church. It's something that I've called out for quite some time now, but I've noticed for the most part, the Catholic community is silent on these. And I have to ask, why is that? And not only silent, but unfortunately, we, as I pointed out not too long ago, Pope Leo sent a bishop to celebrate one of these LGBT masses. And then, not only that, allowed for a procession into St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican of a rainbow cross. It's such a blasphemous concept, and yet it was given a pass by the Pope. No apologies, no retractions, no explanations, nothing but silence since then. And you know what's even sadder is, again, the Catholic community as a whole has been pretty silent on that issue. I'm left scratching my head on that one. I don't understand that. A rainbow cross is processed into the Vatican and almost everyone is silent. What is going on here? What's happening? But we can comment on the color of the liturgical vestments that the Pope is wearing and make a big deal out of that? I mean, okay, whatever. Rant off. Back to the article. The Soho Masses, 2013. These were stopped and new arrangements offered instead at the Church of the Immaculate Conception, Farm Street. There were demonstrators telling us that we were all going to hell, he says. People kept saying that I campaigned for gay rights, but I was just saying you're welcome. Everybody has their home in the church. I wasn't doing anything radical. Campaigning for rights of a person, I don't see how that translates into having pride masses and stuff like that. Help me understand this. Everybody has their home in the church. I wasn't doing anything radical. It was interpreted that way, he says, because people are afraid of chaos, of things breaking down. We lived in a control society. Is that really what it is? They're afraid of things breaking down, or are they afraid that you're endorsing something that you shouldn't be endorsing and trying to normalize it and making masses dedicated to it? He says, we live in a controlled society, but Jesus is not about control. He said to sit down and eat with the tax collector and the prostitutes. Sure, Jesus did that. He also told them, repent of your sins. He also said, go and sin no more. That part is always left out from this group, isn't it? The group that is always advocating for this stuff, they point out the tax collector, the prostitutes, Jesus ate with them. Yes, yes. But you always leave out that little bit where Jesus said, repent of your sins. And he threatened people with hellfire. You always leave that out. Why is that? Oh, because you don't believe it's a sin. That's why. That's why. They don't believe it's a sin. They don't believe homosexual acts are sinful. And they're trying to normalize it. It continues. Certainly, he thinks a gay man could be Pope. I'm sure there has been one already. I have no idea who, but I don't think people's sexual identity is particularly important. I'm not worried about someone being gay. I'd rather be worried if they didn't love anybody. Okay, hold on. Rewind that. Okay. He thinks a gay man could be Pope. He says he's sure there's been one already. Well, there have been a number of claims that, you know, some of the popes in the past were not only gay, but were acting on it, right? Some popes appear to have been incestuous. One of them was deposed. What year was that? 890-something? Nine? I forget. What year was it? I did a show on it. John the 12th was deposed for one reason, for incest, among other things like toasting to the devil and some weird stuff. We'll need to go back and watch that video, but yeah. He was accused of incest. He was the one who died in bed sleeping with another man's wife, and the man killed him. But some suggest it was actually a homosexual relationship. So some have suggested he was a homosexual. But then there's been others. Has there been like any definitive proof? No. But there have been some suggestions and indications and claims that this Pope slept with a man and stuff like that. But, you know, unless you got a videotape of it, people can always say, well, no, that was just an accusation. That was just a slander or something like that. Okay. But, all right, putting that issue to the side, a gay Pope, he says, I don't think people's sexual identity is particularly important. God thinks it's important. That's the problem. God thinks it's important, you don't. If God thinks it's important, you should. And you shouldn't dismiss this. But he said, I'm not worried about someone being gay. I'd be worried if they didn't love anybody. So this is a complete endorsement of same-sex relationships, whether he wants to admit it or not, whether elsewhere he says something critical about it or not. And this is what they often do, speak out of both sides of their mouth. They'll say something critical about it, but then go and say something that completely supports it and endorses it. I'd be worried if they didn't love anybody. But again, for him, the idea of homosexual love is, it's still love for him. It's not sinful. Look, if the sexual identity isn't important, and if love is love, then why is homosexual activity sinful? Please explain that to me. You can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't have both. Either sexual identity is important, it does matter, and this kind of activity is not love, and therefore homosexual acts are sinful, or sexual identity doesn't matter, love is love, ergo homosexual acts are not sinful. It's one or the two. So I have to say, how can you affirm the teaching of the church that this is disordered, that this is wrong, that this is sinful? How can you affirm that if sexual identity doesn't matter and if homosexual love is still love? How can you say that? You cannot affirm what the church teaches. And so I think that this is a subtle way of them trying to weasel their way into the church and weasel this activity into the church and accept it. And before long, what you'll see is they'll say, not all homosexual acts are sinful. Maybe some in particular cases are sinful. So, you know, homosexual acts outside of a homosexual marriage are wrong. But within a homosexual marriage, as long as it's monogamous, it's not wrong. You'll see them start to make those kinds of qualifications. As far as women priests, it says, meanwhile, women can't even be ordained as priests yet. Is this not a shame on the Catholic Church? Though he is open to this change, if the church so decides, it's complicated. Wait, what do you mean if the church so decides? Ordinatio sacerdotalis is incredibly clear, and it's using ex-cathedra language, that women cannot be ordained to the priesthood. Now, if that can change, throw out ex-cathedra, throw out the magisterium, throw out papal infallibility, throw out the papacy, throw out everything. Just throw it all out. It means nothing. If you can use ex-cathedra language and then change whatever that teaching is, none of this means anything at that point. You can just change anything at that point. If this was just a pump fake and the church was trying to make it sound like it's ex-cathedra, but it's not really, it tries to make it sound irreformable, but it's not really, it's just a pump fake, then everything else can change. Everything else that sounded like it was irreformable, well, that's also subject to reform. And he's not the only cardinal doing this. I see numerous cardinals saying that this teaching can change. How do you say that in light of Ordinatio Sacerdotalis? That's my question. Now, if you're not a Catholic, I could see you arguing that. You don't hold to Ordinatio Sacerdotalis. But if you hold to the papacy as a Catholic, excuse me, the papacy has this whole document saying it can't happen and using infallible language for it. If that's not infallible, and if that is reformable, throw the whole thing away. The magisterium at that point is just misleading you. So I don't understand how he can say that as a cardinal. It would make sense for him if he were an Anglican to say something like that. But I don't know how a Catholic could say that. So he says, if you talk to Catholic or Anglican bishops in Africa, they would be progressive politically with a massive sense of injustice of the world economy. They would have a passionate commitment to fighting for the poorest, and they would probably wish to engage with Muslims and other believers. But they remain overwhelmingly opposed to women priests. In October, some African prelates reacted to the appointment of Sarah Mulally as the first female Archbishop of Canterbury by rejecting her authority. He says, I know Sarah, and she's wonderful, but it would be arrogance of the West to say that our ideas of progress are the unique ones. Listen, what does that even mean? I don't know. I've read that like 20 times. I still don't know what that means. And here's another one of my critiques of liberal prelates like this cardinal. I don't understand what they're saying half of the time. They just are not clear. It's not hard. It's really not hard to be clear. Unless you're intentionally trying to obfuscate. Unless you're intentionally trying to be ambiguous and unclear. More on women's ordination. He says, it's not the most important question. Oh, okay. All right. Maybe it's not the most important question, but it is important, right? Ordination to the priesthood isn't the big priority. If we're going to shift it, it has to be done with the consent of the whole church. What are you talking about? This is like saying, if we're going to change the teaching on homosexuality, it has to be with the consent of the whole church. If we're going to change the divinity of Jesus, it has to be with the whole consent of the church. What are you talking about? I thought this was one of those teachings that can't change. If this can change, everything else can change. Everything else is up for grabs. So what are you talking about? It has to be done with the consent of the church. If the church is consenting to this, then guess what? You falsified your church. That's what that means. It doesn't mean that this is okay now. It means that your church isn't the church. And you've falsified Catholicism. That's what it means. I suspect he doesn't believe in an infallibility for the magisterium. I suspect he thinks that really anything can be reformed. Last year, a study of the St. Barnabas Society found that over the past 30 years, several hundred priests and more than a dozen Anglican bishops have converted to Catholicism, partly driven by the Church of England's decision to allow women to join the priesthood. What does this say about Catholicism? Some may have prejudices against women, and some say that isn't the tradition, he says. Prejudices against women? Is that really what's driving the question of the prohibition of women to the priesthood? I mean, does he believe John Paul II was just prejudiced against women, or Jesus was, or the apostles were, or, you know, the majority of church history was? I mean, to put it in those terms is a straw man. I think the question isn't one of prejudice, but is rather one of, does the church have that authority? Now, according to John Paul II, with ex-cathedra language, and explicitly saying it's an infallible teaching, he says the church doesn't have that authority. So who am I supposed to listen to, the Pope or these cardinals who continue to say this? And why aren't they being reprimanded? Like, what, Pope Leo just has nothing to say? He doesn't think, by you saying that, you're completely undermining my authority as Pope. Maybe I should do something here. Maybe I should step in and discipline you. Still, he says, I'm in favor of moving ahead quickly on the ordination of women to the diaconate. What? Moving quickly on that one. The question of women to the priesthood, you know, we need to slow that one down and wait for the consent of the church. And I don't know why. But you know what? That kind of language that he's using, unfortunately, is language that you can find in Pope Leo himself. he has spoken of the question of women's ordination as a reformable matter. Not something that he wants to reform at this time, but something in theory that could be reformed, which unfortunately he used that same language for the church's teaching on homosexuality. He seems to believe that that can also reform, unfortunately, according to Pope Leo. I think he's wrong. I mean, I think if that can be reformed, you can reform anything. You might as well just throw out your authority at that point as Pope. But putting that issue to the side, he says on the question of women to the diaconate, surely, though, it is a key marker of progress, whatever progress is, and surely it matters that women cannot rise to those roles that are seen by the public as influential, question mark. I don't know what that means. I'm sorry. Word salad. Whatever. Okay. All I have to say, again, in concluding that part of this stream is, this guy should not be a cardinal and should immediately be removed. He and everyone else who's like him, and there's a lot of them, unfortunately. And he was very influential in the 2023 Synod, and he still remains very influential. Persons like this should be disciplined. If they're not disciplined, guess what? Nobody's going to take the church seriously. Nobody's going to listen to its moral authority. Nobody's going to listen to its teachings, because when cardinals, high-ranking cardinals, are undermining the teaching of the church with impunity, without any consequences, without any discipline, nobody else is going to listen to the church. Because if the cardinals don't have to, why would I? Why would you? It's a disaster. It needs to be addressed. Now, shifting gears slightly here. And by the way, let me remind y'all, those of y'all who are just now tuning in, make sure to hit that subscribe button. I really appreciate your support of the channel. Goes a long way in helping me also reach new audiences. So please do your part if you can. Hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. Shifting gears here. There's a new proposal for Latin Mass sent to the cardinals, who are going to be convening tomorrow and the next day with Pope and an extraordinary consistory. So a letter was sent to them, an open letter, suggesting that the Latin Mass be structured like the ordinariate, like the Anglican ordinariate in the church. A personal jurisdiction with its own bishop, priests, parishes, and seminaries for the TLM cooperating with local bishops. I don't know how that is different than something like the FSSP. I know technically the FSSP is not an ordinariate. I understand it's a priestly society, but functionally, how would this be different would be my question. And I understand why people really want this, right? Why they really want to see less restrictions on the Latin Mass. This is something we've spoken about, and I've shown reasons for that, reasons against it. We've spoken about every angle on this question. And I am sympathetic for anybody who feels like, you know, they want to have a Latin Mass and they want to see less restrictions there. I get it. I understand. I guess where I'm coming from is I don't understand why an open letter is sent about obtaining a personal prelature or personal jurisdiction, like an ordinariate for the Latin Mass, when number one, it seems like there's something already similar to that. But number two, even if there is a distinction that can be made, guys, there are Pride Masses going on right now in the Catholic Church. Can we tend to that first? I mean, honest question. I totally understand the debate between Latin Mass, Novus Ordos. I get it. I believe me. I understand. But can we address the issue of Pride Masses first before anything else? Before the issue of the Roman Rite is addressed, as far as extraordinary form, ordinary form, and somehow making it more organic and mutually enriching, or just severing it, making it two different, right? Before we have that conversation, can we just stop having Pride Masses, please? Can we address that first, please? I'm begging you. Can we have an open letter about that to the cardinals? It seems to me that should be addressed first before anything else. And again, no disrespect to anybody who wants to have Latin Mass, not trying to devalue any kind of sensitivities there or needs. I get it. But what I'm saying is, this one needs to be addressed first. And I think one of the reasons why a lot of people are wanting to have Latin masses is they're trying to get away from really bad Novus Ordo liturgies. Some of them are Pride masses. Others may not necessarily be that bad, but they are things that need to be adjusted. And I do, and I'm going to continue to say it, I think if the Novus Ordo is addressed and fixed in many cases, and the way it's practically celebrated in many cases, that would fix the root of the problem. And you really wouldn't see all this stuff with Latin masses at that point. The reason why people are flocking to a Latin mass is because they're trying to get away from a really bad Novus Ordo. If you fix the root of the problem, you won't have this other issue. Be that as it may, I think the issue of Pride masses needs to be addressed first and foremost. We have priests celebrating them. We have bishops celebrating them, as I've shown on this channel. Nothing is done to them. They haven't been disciplined by Pope Leo, and they continue to happen under Pope Leo. They weren't disciplined by Pope Francis. They weren't disciplined by Benedict or John Paul II. I've never seen an encyclical condemning Pride masses, have you? Why is that? There are papal endorsements of every other kind of liturgy, right? There's papal endorsements for charismatic masses. There's papal endorsements for any type of liturgy that you can think of. And there are also papal condemnations of some bad liturgies, like poorly celebrated Novus Ordos. I remember when Pope Francis was critiquing poorly celebrated Novus Ordos. And by the way, it's not enough to just critique them. You need to put teeth behind it and actually do something about it. But that's a different issue. I've seen popes weigh in one way or another in favor or against on every other kind of liturgy, good or bad, except Pride masses. I haven't seen them say a word about Pride masses. I don't get that. I don't understand. Again, I do see Pope Leo implicitly endorsing them to one degree or another by either tolerating or allowing them, or unfortunately sending a bishop to some of them. So my thing is, I understand and I appreciate where some of these people are coming from with the Latin Mass, and I get it. And I really do want to be respectful and sensitive to the needs there. But I have to say, I really think all this energy needs to be first spent on getting the papacy to condemn this other stuff and to do something about them. Maybe have some encyclical, an apostolic constitution would be better, but maybe have some kind of encyclical, put something in canon law. For crying out loud, can we at least have a general audience condemning Pride Mass? Like an off-the-cuff comment in an interview, something? Popes can comment on everything else in the world except that. I don't get it, unless it's intentional. And I think it is. I think that needs to be addressed. Shifting gears one more time to something, though, related. We've seen this case with the Diocese of Charlotte and the new bishop there, and a lot of waves that have been created by some of the reforms that he's implementing in his diocese liturgically, including but not limited to, he wants to prohibit the use of all kneelers and communion rails and altar rails and stuff like that. I think he also wants to prohibit intinction, which is the dipping of the Eucharistic bread into the Eucharistic chalice and then distributing it that way. And so what has happened is 30 priests within his diocese have protested this and thus written to the Vatican, submitting a dubia, which is a list of questions submitted to the Vatican. Most of the time when dubia are submitted, they're not responded to. by the Vatican. And if they are responded to, in the majority of cases, they're not responded to publicly. Very rarely are they responded to and published publicly. I suspect they probably won't get a public answer, if at all. But be that as it may, I understand the need of the priest to do this, and the people in the Diocese of Charlotte having their concerns. They feel that kneeling is the best expression for them to receive communion. I understand where they're coming from on that. I get that. But I have to just point out something similar. 30 priests getting together to submit this, as legitimate as that is, I think that's perfectly legitimate. I think that's fine. They have a right to do that and ask questions. Does the bishop really have the authority to restrict this and tell us we can't use kneelers? That's totally legitimate. I understand that. And I think it's worthwhile to ask the question to the Vatican. Nothing wrong with that. So I'm not critiquing the priests. I'm not critiquing at all. But what I'm saying is, if you can get 30 priests together to submit a dubium, if it's one question or multiple questions, the dubia, to the Vatican for asking for clarification on it. Can we get 30 priests to submit a dubium to the Vatican about the question of pride mass? Can we do that? If 30 priests can ask a question on this, can we get 30 priests to ask a question on this other stuff? And to me, I just do think that, hey, wouldn't it make sense to address that one first? Now, maybe both can be done, right? Maybe it's a both and, but it sure seems that it would be helpful if 30 priests got together. Now, some might say, well, hey, well, those 30 priests, they don't have pride masses in their diocese. Maybe, but here's the reality. Every bishop and every priest has a responsibility to all Catholics in the church worldwide. Of course, they have a particular responsibility to their diocese and to their particular flock, their parish that is entrusted to them. Yes, of course. But there is a general sense in which every minister has a responsibility to every person in the church. And so there would be nothing wrong with 30 priests getting together and saying, hey, we want a response from the Vatican on the question of pride masses. Is this licit or not? And are you going to do anything about it or not? Should this be done? Are you going to condemn it? Are you going to write an encyclical against this? If we have Traditionis Custodis restricting the Latin Mass, a motu proprio, I understand the arguments for it, and we can debate whether or not those were good arguments or not, but I understand why Pope Francis was doing what he was doing, even if it could have maybe have been done better. I understand what his concerns and grievances were, however, again, legitimate or illegitimate they may have been. I know what his mindset was on it. But if we can get a motu proprio restricting the Latin Mass, can we get a motu proprio restricting or excluding altogether Pride Masses? And can we get 30 priests to submit a dubium on that one? That would be nice. One other side note here. I see that LifeSite News, John Henry Weston, just posted something. It says, here's from their social media account, exposing Cardinal Burke's silence on Pope Leo, Vatican scandal revealed. That's the name of the article they posted. And then they post on their social media, John Henry Weston exposes the deafening silence of one of the church's most prominent defenders, Cardinal Raymond Burke. So that was not on my bingo card for 2026. I did not expect John Henry Weston, LifeSite News, to come out guns blazing and blasting Cardinal Burke. I have to honestly ask, I mean, whatever criticisms that can be leveled and whatever praises that can be made about Cardinal Burke, I don't understand critiquing Cardinal Burke but then promoting Archbishop Vigano. Help me understand that. Praising Vigano, giving him a platform, but then critiquing Burke, it just, whatever criticisms that can be made about Burke. I don't know. Aren't there other ones that need to be made about Vigano? I'm confused on that one. Somebody help me understand this one. I'm confused. Anyways, I had to just quickly weigh in on that one just because I saw that come up. All right. Well, those are my thoughts on the matter. Certainly open to hearing your perspective on it. I don't always have all of the answers. Maybe I'm missing something. So if I am, please let me know in the comment section. And if you enjoyed this content and you want to see more like it, make sure to hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, and also consider supporting the channel at Patreon. Go to patreon.com/reasonandtheology. I would greatly appreciate the support there. It's what enables me to continue to provide this kind of content to you all every single day for free. So if you want to see that continue to happen, please do your part. Consider supporting the channel on Patreon. And very lastly here, want to remind you of rtcourses.com, where I'm selling my courses that I offer at the university level, where I've taught these courses at a Catholic university. I've now made them available to you all, so you don't have to pay the university fees. You can get them directly from me. Just go to rtcourses.com and check out especially my magisterial studies program, where I offer over 30 lectures on everything you need to know about the teaching authority of the Catholic Church, the magisterium, what it is, its history, how to read magisterial documents. Check that out. Also check out the lecture that I gave last month, Can Catholic Doctrine Change? Exploring the possibility of doctrinal reversals. What can and can't change, if anything can change. We talk about that in detail, and I answer the question by what the magisterium says. I'm telling you what the magisterium says on the question. So maybe check that out as well. And then, of course, there's all sorts of other courses and even free resources at the very bottom. I think you'll enjoy these. Did the Pope teach that salvation through non-Christian religions is possible? There's a free ebook for you. The Path of the Bible, How We Got the Bible, Copies, Changes, and Challenges on the Question of Textual Criticism. Free ebook. Y'all go and check that out. I think you'll really enjoy it. rtcourses.com. Thank you so much for the super chat here. Let's see what Killer says. Not Catholic, but still appreciate your streams. Sorry if I ever come across as rude. Here's something to show a little bit of support. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you. And I haven't seen anything rude from you. So I appreciate you so much. Thank you. And I want to also thank all of you who have supported the channel and helped me reach 2026. We're still here, right? We started in 2019, and we're here in 2026 because of all of you guys and your generous support. So thank you all to the subscribers, to the viewers, to the patrons. I truly appreciate you, and I'm really excited about this year. A lot of great content to come, a lot of really exciting plans for the channel this year, and also a lot of good patron-only content coming to you guys on Patreon and also here on YouTube if you're a channel member. So stay tuned for more. We'll see you later. God bless.